Maria Zylstra here, now with On the Phone in Toronto for Lingua Franca here on ABC Radio National, Joe Clark, journalist and author of an e-book on Canadian English. So how about we start with a definition of that, Joe?
Right. Well, Canadian English, like other dialects, has two forms, spoken and written. And the spoken form is simply a dialect of American English. And the reason why we sound like Americans is because fundamentally we are speaking American English. That's due to various historical reasons. But the Canadian accent is neutral. It's exceedingly neutral. You can't even tell where it's from, which is why so many Canadians are actors in Hollywood, newsreaders on American television shows, reporters for American broadcast and cable networks, and so on, right? You can tell we're not from the South. You can tell we're not Texans. You can tell we're not New York Jews, African Americans. We don't come from these minority dialects, but you can't really tell where we are. It's exceedingly neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Written English, though, is its own unique thing. There is nothing else like Canadian written English, but only in a few hundred words. But they're very important words, and they come up again and again.
Now, I just want to backtrack, and we'll come back to the written form, but just talking about the spoken form, is the accent of English speakers in Canada, that neutral accent that you're telling about now, is that the product of those United Empire loyalists, so, you know, those people who were loyal to the British Empire during the American Revolution, who thereafter fled north to the British North American colonies of Nova Scotia and Ontario, Quebec? Is that a product of that?
And the Loyalists went to New Brunswick, which is the province I'm from. No, not directly. Now, the true experts on the history and development of Canadian speech are other people, not me. But I do know enough to accurately tell you that, no, the Loyalists who were, we would call them Americans, but, you know, America hadn't come into existence really at that point yet, were British settlers in the new colonies of what would later become the United States. And after the Revolutionary War, their side lost, essentially, because America declared independence from the United Kingdom. The loyalists were still loyal, hence the name, to the British Crown, and because of persecution and confiscation of their belongings and land and so on, they needed to find a place that was more amenable, right? They wanted to go where they were wanted. And we were still a British colony. I mean, we're still part of the British Empire even today, right? So they simply moved north. And they brought with them their dialect of the time, which was a proto-American-influenced British English. And the most important feature of that is most of them had post-vocalic Rs. They pronounced an R after a vowel most of the time, which is one of the salient features of American English, right? And that influenced us, right? So we had the initial British influence, because they were one of the two peoples that founded our country after the Indians did. And they spoke a sort of more dainty accent, where the post-vocalic R was a bit more questionable. And these would have been Americans came up with lots of post-vocalic Rs, and they became, you know, a strong influence on Canadian English. Now, the Americans themselves, you know, after 1776, when it was not in dispute that they're Americans, the Americans had a lot of influence on Canada because we're much closer to them. We have much greater trade, right, than we did with Mother England, which was across an ocean. So over those two centuries, Canadian and Northern American accents merged into this network of similar dialects, and we just happened to speak one of them. So the Loyalists had a historical contribution to a really big feature of our dialect, which is post-vocalic Rs and a few vowel features. But they weren't the pivotal factor there.
Right. Well, can you demonstrate that post-vocalic R? I mean, you're probably doing it, but could you do it in a more pointed fashion for us?
Well, just saying the word, post-vocalic R, means I'm uttering the R's after the vowel. Australians would say post-vocalic ah. I can't quite do the Australian vowels. Have I tried. I just can't do it.
Oh, you just have to relax your mouth, Joe. Just let it do nothing.
Inside a word like would, you would not hear an ah. But inside a word like word in Canadian, you would hear an R.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about Canadian English orthography, Joe, because as you've demonstrated in your book, there is a small set of words that distinguish Canadian English from US spelling and British spellings, that they're really a sort of a crossover between the two.
Yeah, we have a combination of British and American spellings in a lot of important words and a lot of suffixes that are used productively. So Canadian English uses present-day U.S. English, I-Z-E, in words like organize and realize and paralyze, and right? But we also have telltale British spellings like honor and color and ardor and fervor, all of which have the U in it, in the middle. So we don't write honor as H-O-N-O-R, as the Americans do. We write it as H-O-N-O-U-R, as the British do. So those two suffixes are the gateway drug into Canadian English spelling. And then we have somewhat motley collection of nouns, some of which are hewed to the American side and others hewed to the British side. So things to do with technology and trade and physical objects tend to be American spelling. So the tire on your car is a T-I-R-E. It is not a T-Y-R-E. If you do a bad job at parallel parking and you bump your tire against the curb, it's a C-U-R-B. It is not a K-E-R-B. If you have a really old car, it might have a carburetor in it with one T, not a carburetor with two Ts. But a lot of things in the financial services are British origin. So if you're one of those old school people who doesn't pay electronically and you have to write a check for something, it's C-H-E-Q-U-E, right? So we this menagerie of nouns that you just have to keep track of which ones we use the American spelling on and which ones we use the British.
Mm. And you've demonstrated with a series of surveys that those spellings are consistent within Canada throughout.
And interestingly enough, not just historically consistent, you know, over the decades, although if you go quite far back into the 20th century, you get a lot of British spellings, but we don't live there anymore. Not just historically consistent, but consistent across different types of writing. So everything from professionally edited text in award-winning literature to professionally edited text in magazines and newspapers, to things like blogs, all use the Canadian spellings lock, stock, and barrel with very unusual exceptions, right? Which could just be a slip-up. It could just be Microsoft Word overcorrecting their spelling once and they didn't notice it. So the interesting thing about Canadian English, which is, you know, one of those important features about Canadian identity, we have to remind ourselves that it's real. Canadian English spelling is a real thing. Everyone uses it, even in relaxed, informal, unedited environments like blogs. It is rock solid and has been for generations.
Mm. Well, two interesting things about that I'd like to just get you to comment on. One is that despite that being so rock solid and consistent, you indicate that a lot of Canadians aren't quite sure whether they're spelling things correctly or not.
Yes, that was really the case up until the 1990s. There is the Canadian inferiority complex, which goes along with the questions of identity. And you combine that with the threat of anti-Americanism in Anglo-Canadian culture, and then people aren't sure, well, should I really be writing authorize with a Z? Shouldn't I be writing it with an S? Because fundamentally we're not American, we're more British. Should I be using double quotation marks? Shouldn't I be using single quotation marks? Because really double quotes are American, right? So the doubt is based on trying to separate yourself from the American influence, the, you know, ostensibly pernicious American influence. God forbid that your writing makes you look American, right? So then people overcorrect and they do crazy things like write tire with a Y and aluminum with an extra I so it becomes aluminium, and they use single quotes and ridiculous things like this. There's no basis for that whatsoever. Those are just mistakes. Those are flat-out mistakes based on ignorance, right? But that did change. That situation improved enormously when Oxford University Press Canada published its two dictionaries of Canadian English. One was called the Oxford Canadian Dictionary, and the successor was called the Canadian Oxford Dictionary. They were both bestsellers. They sold about 400,000 copies. The second one was on the bestseller list for months. So there was a hunger among Canadians to learn about their own dialect, and it settled a lot of questions because it was straightforwardly put in the dictionary that, no, you write authorized with a Z and honor with a U, and actually you call the last letter of the alphabet a Z, not a Z, right? It just settled a lot of arguments, and that is one of the reasons why Canadian spelling has been so consistent across all these forms, because by far the dominant dictionary used is the one that was a bestseller and everyone has and everyone believes in. It was a cause célèbre, kind of. And that kind of inferiority complex in writing and should we regularize things to be more British has significantly dissipated.
Mm. Well, that was actually the second question that I was going to ask you about how amazing it is that dictionary was on the bestseller list for so long, because it sounds from what you're saying too that if Canadians weren't having any difficulty with those spellings consistently across time and across all of Canada in all different usages, that dictionary was so popular is a kind of a remarkable something. But I guess it shows also, like you say, that slight wobbliness about identity, the hunger for a language identity, a separate language identity.
And a reassurance, a confirmation of what you suspected to be true, right? Now, the other really important thing that Canadian Oxford did is define the hundreds of Canadian-only words, right, and Canadian-only senses. There are truly hundreds of those things. And if you Google around for, you know, particularly stupid articles on Canadian English, they always talk about words related to the landscape that never come up, things like muskeg and inukshuk and so on. You never hear those. You never hear those. But there are truly hundreds of Canadian-only words or Canadian-only senses of words, right? And those, lots of them, not all of them, lots of them were defined in this dictionary really for the first time. And, you know, it was that makes them, you know, more real. I mean, everything from things that shouldn't be in question, like what you call the elected member of your provincial government, right? Is that person a member of the Legislative Assembly, an MPP, a member of Provincial Parliament, a member of the National Assembly, MNA? All these terms were defined actually for the first time. So they're real. They're not just neologisms that some people in a rarefied splinter group use. They're the real words for things, right? And that goes all the way down to just everyday things like how you pay for things at the store. You bring your purchase to the cash and you pay by Interac. I mean, those are Canadian English words.
The say cash that again. The cash you bring your purchases to the cash register.
Yeah, no, not cash register.
But it means register.
No. So you're lost in the store. You're holding your item. You're lost in the store. You ask someone, "Where's the cash?" And they say, "Oh, it's up there." So you go to the cash, which can be the cashier, the cash register, the bank of cash registers, wherever it is you go to pay, right? Mm-hmm. You bring it up to the cash and you pay by Interac, which is a trade term, capital INTERAC. It's like EFTPOS. It's direct debit. And debit is also a Canadian English term.
Joe, our link is going to be switched off in about 49 seconds, 48, 47. So I'm just going to say thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And that was Joe Clark on the line from Toronto in Canada talking about his e-book, which is called Organising Our Marvellous Neighbours, on the distinguishing features of Canadian English. And to find the details of it, just check the page for this week's program on the Lingua Franca website at abc.net.au/rn/linguafranca. Here on ABC Radio National, I'm Maria Zylstra. Ciao, ciao.
President Obama will visit Australia on the 16th and 17th of November.
After two false starts, US President Barack Obama arrives in Australia.
The US President Barack Obama is expected to announce a whole new phase of US-Australia military cooperation next week when he and Prime Minister Julia Gillard visit Darwin to mark the 60th anniversary of the ANZUS Alliance.
That's Revision. You can download this program from the Radio National website.